long overdue decisions in sport is our talk topic today, Raymond. You got any more?
I haven't thought of any more since you asked me the first time. You caught me on the hop there.
I'll tell you what, the one that sort of dovetails into where we're going next, which is our legend, and that is Andrew Symonds, who's working now for the Fox Cricket Network.
Bring back Andrew Symonds, long overdue.
No, long overdue decisions in sport is that we're not listening to Mark Nicholas present cricket in Australia. So that's just my thoughts on it. Which brings us to our legend of the game. He's a two-time World Cup winner, Raymond. He's 26 test matches for Australia, 198 one-day internationals. The man known universally as Big Roy.
Great to watch.
He's been good enough to join us on the line. G'day, Andrew.
How are you, boys? Morning.
Yeah,
morning, Andrew.
We're really well. How'd you go last night? Are you enjoying your time with Fox Cricket? I tell you, it's not a bad gig, is it?
Yeah, no. It's. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't having fun. Yeah, it's a really good job, and they're very flexible and with how we want to sort of do things as well. And they're happy to listen to us a bit, and yeah, we're just trying to work out the best way to get things done and get people a good viewing, I suppose.
No, it's coming across great, Andrew. Andrew, what about as a ex-Australian cricketer watching and having to commentate on the team now that's going through, I guess, a state of flux at the moment, aren't they? It's tough times for Australian cricket, Andrew.
Yeah, it is. I suppose the way that I'd describe it is you're watching in frustration, you know. You're trying to think of ways you could help or suggestions you could make. Gilly and I went down and had a beer with the Australians last night after the game, and everything we spoke about, we sort of suggested that they've turned that rock over.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not as if there's nothing going on and they're not thinking about it and not trying to straighten things out. But the feeling I sort of get is they're a bit shell-shocked, you know what I mean? They're sort of... you know, what do we do next and how do we go about it to get a result? So they've just got to try and find a way to... I reckon they've got to go really small steps, tiny bits at a time, and try and, you know, win each ball, win each over. But I think for the actual individual, it's about what they're thinking under pressure. Mm. You know, the big moments when the game's on the line or, you know, someone's just come to the crease or someone's just got the ball. Being able to think clearly and then carry out your skills is what the best players can do well. So that's in my opinion, that's where they're battling at the moment.
Mm. We like to have a look back on people's careers here in this segment. So let's go back to the start for you, Andrew. Born in England, adopted, moved to Australia very early on. How did cricket become such a big part of your life?
My father was... very, very keen cricketer. He wasn't bad at cricket himself, but the amount of time that he put into me as a child was phenomenal. He'd throw balls to me before and after school, sort of five, sometimes 6 days a week. And
wow.
He'd drive me. We lived in a little town called Charters Towers. When I started playing club cricket, he'd drive me from Charters Towers to Townsville so I could play club cricket in a higher standard in Townsville. So
yeah, that's a route march.
How far is that?
I know that area. That's a route march.
Hour and a half drive into town. So that's the sort of dedication in parents that you may not see these days as much. You know, there are obviously parents that prepare to do that, but I'm forever thankful for what my parents have, you know, gave me the opportunities to do this sort of thing. So, you know, everyone claims to be time poor these days, but, you know, I think as a kid, you know, you need to be practicing to sort of, you know, set all your roots for when you do become an older person, I suppose, in any field, whether it's academically or sporting or whatever it is. As a kid, you've got to get into the right habits, I suppose.
Exactly. Mm. Was it always cricket, Andrew? Were there other sports that you liked? And when did cricket become your destiny, so to speak?
Oh, look, I played pretty much any sport that was thrust in front of me. You know, I was, you know, cricket, football, soccer, hockey, rugby union, you know, in the school, athletics teams, swimming teams, all that sort of stuff. So I was constantly, you know, on the sporting field in all different, you know, types.
Yep.
So And obviously, I suppose, good for your mental and physical development as a kid to be active. You know, with childhood obesity is such a problem in this country, and that's and not all the schools provide sporting challenges for kids now too, which I think is very wrong. But so then it falls on the parents to, you know, time and put the time and money and effort into getting their kids into sport and giving them a chance, I suppose, to potentially chase a dream of playing professionally. We're going through it now. Our kids have just started sort of playing sport and that, and we're running them around, so they're getting their own back on us now.
now your time, poor Andrew.
Get used to it, mate.
Right.
Get used to it. Let's go to the big moments in your international career. I think you're walking out to bat. It was a depleted Australian side at the 2003 World Cup. The Aussies were 4 for 86 against Pakistan. And look, you don't know Wayne Goober. He's an old teammate of mine. He's a very handy fourth grade cricketer. He was sitting on the couch next to his then girlfriend, and as you were walking out to bat, he said, "I'm a better batter than this bloke."
Right.
143 not out later.
What did he say then?
I think he finally conceded that actually wasn't the case. How important was that innings for you, Andrew, as someone who went on to have an outstanding international career?
Yeah, well, that particular innings was pivotal. You know, he was right. I didn't deserve to be on that trip. I hadn't scored enough runs and what have you. But the coach, John Buchanan, and the captain, Ricky Ponting, saw something in me that they liked and they wanted me on that trip. And as you said, we were depleted. We had Darren Lehman was on suspension. He'd been suspended back in Australia before we left. Michael Bevan was out with, I think he torn his groin. And Warnie had been sent home the night before our first game with his diuretic that he'd taken.
That's right.
So, yeah, we were depleted. So we had, you know, blokes like Andy Bickle, Brad Hogg, Jimmy Marr, and we were the men that were taking up the slack. And so the rest of the cricketing world were thinking, right, they're vulnerable, Australia, we can perhaps have a bit of a chop at them here and we'll have a bit of luck. But, yeah, those men really rallied and, you know, I was lucky enough that day to play in innings, which pretty much probably changed my life, I suppose, in the end. Because I made those runs that day and I always went back when I was doing it tough to that innings. I'd sort of always refer back to it or watch a bit of it or watch how I started my innings. But that tour was the best tour I ever went on.
Wow!
You know, because of those I suppose difficult sort of periods we went through with the suspension and Warnie got home and Bevo being injured, the boys really sort of galvanised and we went through that tour. We trained very hard, but when we won, we really enjoyed our victories. You know, we all had a good drink together. And really enjoyed it, and the coach wanted he was happy for that to happen. You know, there was no one sneaking out, jumping through windows and sneaking out for a beer. But then we'd get back to training, and it was a really tight unit that were playing for each other very hard. And we ended up going through that World Cup without losing a game.
And
lifting that trophy was a really satisfying feeling. It was a really great trip.
Well, during this period, Andrew, you were still trying to cement yourself in the test team, and did you draw back on that World Cup in that famous Boxing Day test in the Ashes series 06-07 when you walked out to bat, Australia are 5 for 84, the man at the other end of the crease is your great mate Matthew Hayden, teams in all sorts, and you guys put together a 279 run partnership and Andrew Symons gets his maiden test century. What are those memories like, Andrew?
Yeah, it's actually funny. Both my favourite innings, I sort of can't remember a hell of a lot about them. I think that because you're so caught up in the moment where you're trying to redirect how the team's going, so you're sort of more focused on that than how you're feeling yourself, if you know what I mean. You're sort of trying to get things back on track. You know, and that day with Matty, that's exactly what we were doing. We're under the pump and the Englishmen were into us. Kevin Peterson was right into me. And then Haydos, on the rebound, he was just right into KP. Like he just made a beeline for him. KP said, said to me, he said, this bloke's in the team to field. What's he doing out here? So Haydos just went for him. And it sort of distracted the pressure, I suppose, at the moment, because I was quite enjoying it. I was finding it quite humorous. Mm. Haydos, I was talking to him one over, and Haydos just left me and started walking towards KP. And I'm looking at him thinking, mate, I haven't finished speaking to you yet. But if you're busy with him, you go and get into it.
Well, that was significant too, because you know, knowing about your career, and there was a struggle there for runs, and it was Matt Hayden who said to you, mate, you need to hit the ball more. You need to hit more balls in practice. You did that, and things immediately changed. So he was significant in your career.
He was. I look back, and when I was a kid, as I said, I was hitting the ball, you know, twice a day most days. And then once I became a professional, you don't get that unless you go out and do extra sessions yourself. So when we identified that as a potential way to improve my consistency, that's what we did, and that's what worked. Mm-hmm. And so preparation for me was a really big one, and I think it is for everyone, but preparing the right way, you know, preparing smart and being ready for what's going to be put in front of you is key, you know, and that's something I think maybe the Australians at the moment, their method individually and their effort and their thinking and everything is all being done, but actually the actual practical side of it, are they actually preparing, have they found the right method to their own preparation, you know what I mean? Because it took me quite a while to work that out.
Yeah.
And then when you actually get in the nets, or, you know, you're doing your physical training, you need to be doing that right. So when you get out in the middle, that your body's triggering to do the right thing, and your mind's sharp and you're making good decisions. So, that was a key part of me being successful.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Andrew, you also said something earlier which just struck me. You were talking about how Ricky Ponting and I think Gilly and a couple of others saw something in you, wanted you on tours, wanted you in the test team. Is that sort of thinking also could be applied to our current national team, in that we've got players who have got talent, they just need the confidence to believe in themselves? And is it a pick and stick situation at the moment, Andrew? Or
the word talent's a horrible word, I reckon. Because talent in by itself isn't good enough.
Mm.
And what I believe we need to be doing is picking players that have done it consistently for a long period of time, and have the confidence and the runs and the wickets on the board. So when they do get to the top level, they're not sort of going, oh, well, this is a bit harder than what I expected. You know, picking a bloke on talent when he's played half a dozen games, I reckon you're setting him up for failure.
Yeah, good point.
And it's really hard on the actual kid that they pick, because he's got no choice. He's jumping out of his skin. He's thinking, geez, I've just been picked from the country. How good's this?
Yep.
And then when it comes to playing against the best batsmen and the best bowlers in the world, it's a difficult thing. Cricket's a difficult game. You know, being a batsman, you get one chance at innings. That's it. So you've got to be ready for it. And being ready for it is having done it many times. And so it's second nature, because it's a pressure situation. The media's looking at you, the people are looking at you, and your teammates are looking at you. So there's many different factors of pressure. So it's how you can filter that and then perform.
One of the things, we've got time pressures here, Andrew, which is most unfortunate, because I don't know about Roman. I'm thoroughly enjoying this. I'm sure the listeners are as well. Now you're living up in the north of Queensland. Are you still a Broncos man, or are you a Cowboys man? And that 2008 shoulder charge, you realise now that's been outlawed from the game, and you would have had to wrap him up ball and all if it was to happen again.
Yeah, I'm Broncos.
Right.
Cowboys second. But Broncos man. Through and through. So, and yeah, the shoulder charge, it was, I did some training with the Broncos, and Tony Carroll was a very good defensive back rower, and we just did a lot of tackling sort of technique stuff, and he, you know, taught me to work from from low to high and try and get up and under their ribs. And so that bit of training that I'd done with the Broncos came in handy. That I had to let my frustrations on that young gentleman.
Outstanding. Hey, Andrew, looking back on your career now, and as we've touched on some of the highlights, do you look back on a career fulfilled, or were the things that you still wish you could have achieved with the baggy green?
Yeah, look, I would like to have been a better player. I reckon I should have averaged probably 5 or 8 more in Test cricket. I probably should have averaged 5 more in One Day cricket. Mm-hmm. And my bowling, like I was never a very good bowler, but I did work on my bowling hard for that very reason. I should have been a bit better with the ball as well, but in the end, I suppose the politics, and I did some silly things too, don't get me wrong, with the politics, and I just felt let down when we went through the Harbour-Jarn thing, and that weighed very heavily on me.
Yes.
I felt responsible for, dragging my mates into a situation which was not their fault and was just handled poorly, and we didn't get the support we needed. And then I started to get on the grog, and it was a sort of beginning of the end for me there. And then I suppose I left the game. I had had enough, but probably had enough for the wrong reasons, because I probably would have liked to have, should have played for another couple of years, but my headspace was all wrong, that was a shame. I'd like to have gone out, I suppose, a bit more on the terms that I would have liked, I suppose. And sort of left my teammates sort of saying, mate, that was really good having you around and enjoyed playing with you. And it sort of in the end, it wasn't that, I suppose. It was sort of like didn't want the limelight and the attention, and I just had enough of the politics I suppose all that sort of thing. So I was out. And when I actually came back into the side after I'd been suspended, and the feeling that I had for being in that situation had changed, and that's when I sort of knew. Tim Nielsen was a coach, and he said, how are you going with it? And I said, well, I won't actually know until I get out in the middle and have a game and see what I'm feeling in the actual competitive situation. And when I found that it was in the UAE, I sort of went out there to bat, and we were playing Pakistan. It was a tight game. And, my passion for the battle had changed a bit. It wasn't that I didn't want to be in the battle, but it was just I just didn't want to be in that environment, I think it was. Mm. And so that was a sign for me. And, not long after that, I was finished.
I understand.
That's really candid of you. We really appreciate how open and honest you've been, Andrew. We've got to fly. Look, a whole new generation of Australian cricket fans are enjoying what they're getting from Andrew Symonds from a commentary point of view. I know I certainly do. Thanks for your time this morning. Good luck with Fox Cricket for the remainder
we'll
of the summer
and
beyond. And I really appreciate your time this morning, Andrew.
No worries, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Andrew.
There he is, Andrew Symonds, our legend of the game.
Jeez, he spoke very openly.
Didn't he speak well? Yeah. Isn't there more to Andrew Symonds than what you first anticipated?
As is coming across in the Fox coverage, when you hear him, he's very insightful in his comments, and he's straight to the point, isn't he?